is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud here in Po'boy. Government shutdown. The blame game has begun. And why is DACA the sticking point in all of this, I wonder, yeah? What do most Americans really think of this? What are the polls saying? And who is it being impacted by the shutdown? Who really will feel this, if anybody will? We'll talk about that. I'll give you all the information you need about this shutdown today. And then there's the memo. You hear about the memo? This is the FISA warrant gone bad, gone rogue. This looks like it could be a game changer. We will be talking about that today as well. The president's health is on the media wish list, and not in a good way. We'll give you the latest on these accusations about Trump and the porn star as well. And I'll even give you my predictions on the future of our two-party system and why we are living in historical times at the end of this program here. All right, starting at the top of the show here, I'd like to welcome our panel discussion here. Please welcome Ilana Friedman is here. She's a veteran intelligence analyst. She trained in Israel, focused on the impact of terrorism and its threat to America and the West. And Ilana is never short of an opinion. She has a new book out, in fact, Hamas, Care, and the Muslim Brotherhood, The Plot to Destroy America. Dennis Santiago is here. He's a global risk and financial analyst. His subject matter expertise includes strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, and global stability, as well as financial analytics and bank regulation. And George McClellan, he's a conservative political commentator, a weekly columnist on America Out Loud, as well as Ilana is as well, and Dennis has just joined us in that regard as well, I need to tell you. George's professional career spans 43 years in law enforcement and the U.S. Naval Investigative Service has given him a worldview of what really ails us. And if you haven't read George's columns on America Out Loud, you are missing out, friends. So let's start right at the top here about the government shutdown, guys, and discuss this a bit here. So the blame game. All right, let's talk about this. Why is the big deal? Why attach DACA or anything for that matter to the budget process? And I'll explain to everybody that we have not had a budget since 2007. We continue to rule this country by CR, these continual resolutions. This is how the entire Obama years were governed, between that and executive order, of course. But it seems the government is incapable or unwilling or whatever you want to call it to get in a budget. But in previous years, it seems even Chuck Schumer, okay, in the Senate, Senator Schumer was very, very righteous on not attaching anything to the budget process. George, let's start with you here on this budget process a moment. Now, you hear Schumer, you can go back and play those sound bites, George, and he's been very, very adamant about, okay, don't attach anything to the budget. Now, all of a sudden, it seems to me that they want to attach DACA, the Dreamers, and this is the one big card they seem to have in the deck of cards, to the budget process, which has been the stalling point. What do you think's behind all that?
Well, I think they had an agreement. I think Donald Trump would have signed, one certainly that the Republicans, that's Mitch and Ryan, has presented to the president and agreed to by Schumer and his lot. And then suddenly Donald Trump, and I love Donald Trump, he's my president, I guarantee you, but suddenly he put out a tweet that said CHIP should not be part of the long-term program. And now that took away the leverage that the Republicans had for this funding thing. So now Schumer is just saying, right, we're not going to do anything. We'll go for it all. You explain it. And that's where we're at.
Yeah. Well, now it seems to me, George, it seems to me that if you're seeing a lot of the media headlines over the last couple of days, they seem to be pointing more toward, well, they're calling it the Schumer shutdown, in fact. Now, Schumer came out and he said he tried to nail it down to Trump, of course, and called it the Trump shutdown. But that's not catching on in the wind, and it's not catching on with the media as well, which is a real surprise, because even the New York Times, the Washington Post and others they're kind of having a hard time dodging this one and blaming it specifically on the Republicans, which have been notorious for taking the blame for these things. That's kind of an interesting turn this time around with this shutdown, don't you think, George?
Yeah, I do. I think what the Democrats have, except for the fact they can say no and not vote, mm-hmm. that's the only power they have left to achieve what they want to achieve, and that's to keep socialism as part of America's legacy.
Right.
And DACA is illegal anyway. I mean, that's an executive order.
Exactly, yeah. All right, let's get over. Dennis, I want to bring you into something I'm thinking here, is that with all of this said, okay, and I find it's not amusing. It's pretty sickening, actually, what's happening in Washington right now, and you wonder what the impact is to folks out there. We know there's some impacts. I'm going to discuss the impact of these specifically to people in just a little bit here. But this whole thing with DACA, are the Democrats overplaying their hand at this point, or do you think they have a big strategy behind this, Dennis?
Oh, I think they're overplaying their hand tremendously. This is a terrible risk to the Democratic Party to be going down and using an executive order as a hang-up to the entire continuing resolution process. It's you can't even justify it on the basis of saying, well, maybe they're positioning for a 2018 midterm election, keep the problem going. But this is DACA. Everybody understands that the DACA, the wall, all that kind of stuff, that's a long-term negotiated process with a lot of complex variables in it. And it's not something that you do in the heat of the moment, in the middle of a vote to fund the government. It's silly. And, you know, even the mainstream media is basically going, what's up with this? A couple of weeks ago, it sounded like this entire fund the government process was, you know, hunky-dory. Mm-hmm. And, you know, out of the blue, I think, you know, Schumer's the one that probably needs to get his cholesterol checked.
You know, he comes across as a very angry man, I have to tell you. I know a lot of people, when they see him come on the news, Dennis, and they see him start talking, he comes across as a very angry and frustrated man. I think maybe potentially he's been in Washington too long. Of course, a lot of these cats have been up there too long. But a lot of them are starting to leave, too. That's one of the things about draining the swamp. You start to see a lot of these cats squirm, and they start to leave. Here's what I don't get, Dennis. So President Obama ran his entire administration on these CRs, these continuing resolutions. This was just the way of doing business. Why, number one, why isn't anybody complaining about that? Nobody complained about him, and nobody was pushing DACA at that point. In fact, the Democrats could have solved this whole immigration problem when they controlled all branches of government and had the majorities. And of course, right now, the Republicans don't have 60 in the Senate, so they do have limitations there. But here's the thing. What about also the self-righteous Republicans now? Here's another thing I can't get a handle on here, that are refusing to sign the CR any longer. There's several of them, including Rand Paul and Lindsey Graham and others, who said, well, we can't sign that CR any longer. But yet they've done it before. They've done it for all these years since 07. It's the way they've been governing, Dennis. Why all of a sudden the big concern, do you think?
Oh, my opinion on this, geez, you know, if they actually solve something, what would they go to war with in November? Mm-hmm. I think this is this is a swamp, right? I mean, you know, remember Ben Franklin was quoted as saying, "Why do you think we put that thing in a swamp?"
Right. And, so right. Yeah.
And so the bottom line there is, you know, I think there's a lot of calculus going on within the party structures saying, you know, what do we fight about in November? What are going to be our talking points? We want to solve it in January? No, yeah, let's see what we can do about that.
See, I'm so glad you're saying this.
Viewpoint, right? I mean, but you really got to ask the question, why?
Right. That's right. I'm so glad you're being so truthful. I really appreciate you giving us your out loud truth, because I got to tell you, I've got a lot to say about what you're saying right now in a commentary at the end of this program. But Ilana Friedman, you hear Dennis Santiago, you couldn't sum it up really too much better than that. And I think George would probably even agree with this. So Ilana, here's the deal. If they solve these problems, which are very solvable, I mean, the immigration puzzle, the DACA puzzle, the budget puzzle, they're all very, very solvable challenges here. They're not, it's not a, you know, a Rubik's Cube that is unsolvable here, you see. But yet, what would they do with the rest of their time? It seems to me like these politicians want to make themselves important and in demand, Ilana. I think that's the one common denominator I see here across the spectrum. What say you?
Well, I think the Democrats are becoming their own worst enemies. The democratic process in government in Washington has been weaponized by the Democrat Party, and it seems as though they will do whatever is necessary to block Republican initiatives. And now they're holding the entire nation hostage in order, I believe, to try to create a power play against Trump in saying that essentially the message is, you know, you may have the majority in the Senate and the Congress and the House and in the White House, but we still hold the cards and you have to, you know, essentially go along with what we want, because otherwise we are going to steamroll you and we're going to stop you at every opportunity. And they really have been doing that. I don't see that this is a good strategic play for the Democrats, and I think they're going to ultimately suffer for it. And the proof from the outset is that this is being called Schumer's shutdown.
Schumer shutdown, yeah. It has a little ring to it as well.
The tables are doesn't it? The tables are turning is the point. Everybody said if there's a shutdown, the Republicans will be blamed. But guess what? The truth is coming out, and the Democrats have been blocking everything. They've been blocking appointments. They've been blocking hearings. They've been blocking bills. They're not cooperating in the Democratic process. And so the Democrats, yeah, I think, are going to end up holding the bag.
Well, Alana, they're doing everything they can to slow progress down. It seems to be that way. But let me say this, and it depends where your ideology is on all this, because I'll say back to you, and this is for George and Dennis as well. But, you know, in all honesty, Alana, the Republicans did it when Obama was in power as well. I just need to say that there a moment, because this is politics on the high seas. So I just want to say to you that that was also the goal of Republicans when Obama was in the presidency. Do you deny that?
No, not at all. In fact, I think the leadership of the Republican Party needs in Congress needs to change.
Amen.
Because, yeah, we're looking at people who do not have the best interests of the American people at heart. They have their best interests at heart. They want to maintain their positions in the swamp. And I think it's time for them to go. I'm a big believer in term limits, so they shouldn't be, as far as I'm concerned, they shouldn't be there anyway.
Right.
But they really are, they're gumming up the works of the democratic process. This is not what our founding fathers wanted to achieve. And
right.
That's not
hey,
where
George,
they wanted us to be now.
Pick up where Alana just was, George, on the fact of the establishment of moment. Because, you know, I just throw that point out there about the Obama agenda. Not that they agreed with the Obama agenda, but then again, the Democrats don't agree with the Trump agenda either, or the Trump doctrine, as you can almost call it here. But let me ask you this. You talk a lot about the establishment. You talk a lot about the swamp and many, many of your write-ins and what have you. Pick up on that as well. McConnell and Ryan and a lot of these cats that are in high office there in the Republican circles, do you think that their time and their days are numbered as well?
Well, I have to agree with her completely. I mean, yes, I do. They're professional politicians. Why do we need professional politicians? A professional politician gets in office and sits there and continues to help his friends and his the companies in his area, the industry, which we have seen. Mm-hmm. Obama was different. Obama was I think, is a Marxist socialist.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republicans saw that, but were helpless to stop him. He had his phone and his pen, and he said about rearranging America.
Right.
Trump knew that.
Right.
That's why Trump ran, and that's why Trump won. And he's undoing all of that, and they're going berserk. The Democrats are going berserk, the left, trying to stop it. Now, that brings us up to this DACA thing. The DACA thing's illegal, but it's a potential voting block for the Democrats. They're going to fight that tooth and nail that Trump does away with it. And Republicans are still too weak to realize that they can fight back.
You know, George,
and
one of the
invites contempt.
Now, on the point you say there right now, one of the big talking points I'm hearing right now to your point of the Dreamers in the DACA thing is that, okay, so are the Democrats putting illegal immigrants in front of Americans, in front of the military, in front of all Americans, really, with this budget process? And that's kind of a big talking point, I think. How do you, if you're a Democrat, how do you rebuke that? I mean, how do you get away? That, George, That's kind of an in-your-face point. I mean, when you really drill DACA down and the Dreamers down, it's not to say they're not people that we should take a look at. I'm not suggesting that. But I am suggesting that by putting that in the budget process and going through all of this, doesn't that sort of, from a distance, look like they're prioritizing the illegal immigrants above Americans and military and so on and so forth?
It certainly does. That's exactly what it does, and that's where the Republicans are failing to step up and say, listen, let's make a comparison here.
Right.
We have veterans who don't get paid, but we're paying the illegals to live in this country because they're illegals, and we feel sorry for them. Mm-hmm. No, if this shutdown does anything, instead of closing the gates at the mall, the national park,
right.
How about closing off the funds for illegals?
Right, which brings me to an interesting point, because when the Obama shutdown happened and the Republicans were blamed for it in his administration, they put up big, big signs and big, big reference points at all of the parks, and the veterans are being turned away, and they had all these signs up, the parks are closed, everything's closed, you got to go home, and it was all being very theatrical, you know, very, very clearly. And that was a big deal, but now this administration and the Trump and Mulvaney came out to say, no, we're not going to do that. We're not doing that. We want business to be as usual. We don't want to have the pain and suffering for the American people. That's kind of an interesting point. That is a completely at opposite of where the Obama ruled. And again, it's just a fact, whether you like it or not. Listen, we're going to pause right here, friends, and the memo. Have you heard about this memo and what's going on there? There's a lot to talk about on that just ahead, as well as some commentary. We've got a lot coming at you here on Viewpoint this Sunday. We'll be right back.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming, from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio. We're back with you here, Viewpoint this Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud here. Our panel discussion continues here. George McClellan is here, Ilana Friedman, Dennis Santiago. We're talking about a myriad of things today, as well as, of course, the government shutdown, who's impacted by that. And I actually want to share with you that, just real quickly on that government shutdown business, just so you know, Social Security and other government benefits, that all moves forward. Nobody is cut off the air. Your food stamp programs, all of that continue on. Medicare, Medicaid, they operate fine. Veterans hospitals, they operate fine. Local parks, schools, libraries, there's no problems with those. Federal prisons continue. Your courts are still open. Congress, unfortunately, is still there. Most of your federal office buildings are closed. Most departments and agencies will indeed be shut down, and those employees will not report to work. So, you know, that's one thing that happens there. National parks and monuments
monuments will stay open. Again, the OMBD budget director, Mick Mulvaney, came out and said, no, no, we're not going to play that game. So there are a lot. The Postal Service, that's an independent agency. You'll still get your mail whether you want it or not. Your airports are open. Amtrak is open. None of that's impacted. The special counsel Mueller Russian investigation, he's still open because he's got a lot of money. So there's no problem with him, I have to tell you. Now, the IRS customer service, they're closed. So I got some good news for you, Americans. The IRS is closed, so that can't be a bad thing. See, there is a silver lining with this government shutdown business. I told you all. Anyways, a lot of this stuff, as you see, is business as usual. Now, the military, that's a problem. These cats don't get paid. While this is all going on, and obviously they're going to have to resolve this government shutdown pretty quick because you can't not have the military being paid. So that's the 411 on all this business here as far as the government shutdown business goes. And I want to talk about this memo next, guys. This memo is something else here from what we're understanding here. So what's happening? Deep in the basement of the rotunda, there is evidently a room. And it's a high-end security classified room. I can just visualize this room now, friends. And so you have to check in as the politicians go into the room, and you go through a major security clearance check, and then you read the elusive memo, the memo. It's the Holy Grail, right? And you can't record, you can't write, you can't have a pen or paper, you can't take a photograph of it. This is like really like a big deal, right? Okay. So it's like the cure for cancer is the memo, you see? So nobody can touch it, and it just sits there. You can read it, and then you have to leave. And then the next one comes in. Well, evidently reports are that a lot of the politicians are going down. Mostly Republicans are very, very curious. Not so much the Democrats are curious. Potentially they may know something we don't know. I don't know. Hey, Dennis, let's talk about this memo a moment. Let's start with you here on this GPS Fusion warrant memo here. We're hearing that there's supposed to be some really interesting information on here. Nobody's telling us what's really on there, but they're saying it is a game changer, Dennis. And they're saying there could be some people pay a pretty high price, some treason here, criminal charges potentially. But if you watch the body language of the politicians, this does not look like just a regular memo, Dennis. What do you say?
No, it's not. If you look at the body language and the rhetoric coming out of the politicians that have read it, the most common word used is abuse, and which is a pretty strong term in this world. People have compared what they've read to the scandals of Watergate, and so I think there's something pretty significant there. Given that, you know, you got to ask the question. Exactly, you know, what's the definition of abuse, right? You know, because politicians, you know, they're in the business of amping things up. Is it the kind of abuse normally you would say that it was a deliberate taking of the flimsy intelligence that they were getting,
right,
and being too aggressive in asking for FISA warrants?
Right.
And if they did, you know, the next question you ask is, were they doing that for everybody or just for one campaign versus another? If it turns out that the evidence shows that they were doing it for one side disproportionately to the other, yeah, that's abuse.
Well, you're saying if they were heavy-handed against the Republicans, Dennis, is what you're saying.
I mean, because that's what constitutes actual abuse. I mean, you know, if you look at the Watergate thing, it was one side going after the other. It was deliberate. You know, all those kind of motive, method, opportunity all right. Kind of showed up. That hasn't been proven in this case yet. I think that memo is going to come out, and then we're all going to see.
You do believe it's going to be released then, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, there's too many people interested in it.
A lot of pressure. And in fact, there's a hashtag, release the memo, all on Twitter and on social media, hashtag release the memo, making the politicians very nervous.
Oh, yeah. And they should be. I mean, you know, because basically this could end the Mueller investigation.
They're saying. You think that could do that as well. This could end that cold stone. Huh? This could stop it.
Or it could pivot which direction it's going in. I mean, you know, right. I think it'll pivot into the infrastructure. The question that always struck me about this whole thing as it was going down, even during the campaign, was, you know, are these guys being far too aggressive in the actions they're taking against all the way around? Because if you look at previous election cycles and all that kind of stuff, you know, there's iffy stuff that happens in it. It's politics.
Ilana, what do you think about this being a game changer, this memo business? What's your thoughts on that?
This is so far beyond anything that we have seen before. Mm-hmm. When you think about the fact that some of the people who were compromised in this program were people like Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts, Justice Antonin Scalia, 156 federal judges, members of Congress, and the and Donald Trump, who at that time was started when it started was a candidate and of course became president. And the whole idea that that it has been such an abuse of power by the agencies involved that it will make Watergate look like a child's game, which is very similar to what you quoted before from someone else. This is going to be huge, and what I'm hearing is that it will be coming out over the next week or two. They're going to name names, and people are going to suffer consequences, hopefully.
Right. Well, if there is justice, and we're going to see if Lady Justice is still here with us or whether she left the circus, I don't know. But we'll find out very shortly on that point, Ilana. George McClellan, does the FBI have any credibility left, do you think?
Well, certainly not at the leadership level, and I think the memo, part of the expose from that memo will reflect on that. Mm-hmm. That memo is simply going to confirm what we already suspect, mm-hmm. in light of former Director Comey's exculpating Hillary Clinton from any criminal activity because she had no intent. They're swimming in deep waters there. No one believes that. The law is the law. And I think also that memo will reveal Obama's hand as well.
That it's going to reveal a lot about Obama, which you've been saying.
We won't know until we read it.
Yeah.
We won't know until we read it.
All right. So at that point, when that comes out, and if it is revealing George as they say it is, how do you put into context, how will the Democrats defend that? I mean, when you take a look at a lot of the Democratic talking heads that are on a lot of the radio, television, and the mass media, how are they ever going to defend this? I'm dying to see that day, because most of the time they're on there, you know, spewing all kinds of things. You really can't follow them on really either side of the aisle, most of them. But how do you think they defend this? Is it defendable? I mean, what do they say?
You can't defend the indefensible except by rhetoric. Their only mission is to blame Republicans, mm-hmm. And they've tried to do that. Then they'll say everybody does it. Then they will say, well, Trump's collusion that's evidence of Trump's collusion, when there is no evidence that Trump colluded with the Russians. I mean to say that is coming to an end. But it is on the Democrat side. The Democrat Party held the country in sway for 8 long years, right. That plus the Clinton Foundation. This is all going to come out. This is all in that report, that memo.
If it is as explosive as they're saying, and it does change the course of direction of the Mueller, counsel, the special counsel, that is going to be a game changer indeed. You know, this president, I will say, this whole special counsel collusion sort of thing with Russia, I mean, can we all agree at this moment that there just simply is none? It doesn't exist, because I have to tell you all, if there was any reference point of collusion whatsoever, any evidence, don't you think, Dennis, this would be out by now? I mean, come on. I mean, you can't tell me. I mean, I was open-minded to see what they might find if they found it, if this was as, you know, adamant as they were that this was some hanky-panky on the Trump side. Let me see it. But by golly, all this time spent from the left, the right, the center, anyone in between, I'm not seeing anything, Dennis. I don't know what they say next. How do you defend this? Unless the special counsel has another shoe that's going to drop that we don't know, Dennis. You know.
No. There's no defense for this. I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is the Russians thought Hillary Clinton was going to win. The report on the BBC, I was in London. I got the first report out of the Kremlin, and there was applause in the Kremlin when they heard that Trump won, because they had spent the entire night preparing to deal with Hillary Clinton the next day. And it's like, they didn't know either. I mean, you know, this is if there was collusion, they would have known. And they're it's look, the bottom line is that nations on this earth attempt to influence each other all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's a normal course of foreign policy that goes on this planet everywhere.
Right.
And there's a normal noise factor for that. And there is no evidence that there's anything that had happened during
the
conflict
that
exceeds it. It's, if it was there, you know, it'd be a smoking gun by now.
You would think somebody would have flushed it out, Dennis. I mean, somebody would have flushed it out for sure. Okay. On your point just now, Dennis, you're talking about some of that. I want to touch on the polls a moment. You know, I kind of find it very interesting right now. Some of the polls I see in the daily reports are that the president has very, very low ratings. Now, the media reports on this on a day-by-day basis. They're tracking him at all the networks and all of the cable channels and all of the, oh, the president's poll is such and such. He's the lowest ever in the commander-in-chief in our history, historically, of the Union. It's never been this low. It's never been this bad and what have you. Now, here's what really gets me about this, guys, that I want to share with you all. We really don't know where the president's numbers are. And the reason is because what I have determined is this. If you look back at the election in 2016, and George, you're a perfect case to be able to talk about this here because we discussed this many times as this election was happening. When you look back at that moment of time historically, as Dennis was just saying, the polls were so wrong, so far, and so wide, they were so off that everybody was preparing for a Hillary Clinton victory. And when every poll, I went back and watched a lot of the videos in the last day or so to see a lot of the talking points that they were saying just as the night before the election. Oh, president's down in Pennsylvania. He's not going to win Pennsylvania. Oh, he's in trouble. He's in trouble in Ohio. And of course, this went on and on and on all the way up to the night through that night of the election. They had him losing all of those states he won. He's not going to win Florida. There's no way Trump is going to take Florida. Well, it looks like Hillary's going to be the next president. Wow, history will be broken again. We now will have the first female president ever in our history. And this was what was happening in a lot of these videos. And I went back to do a little reminiscing. Of course, you have to do that with a stiff drink when you do that, friends, or you're really in trouble. But the point is, in watching those videos and all of that, it became very obvious to me that the polls were so wrong. So now here's my point, George. I can't believe for a moment, okay, that when you take a look at the real conservative movement, the patriots out there, the people that are behind the Trump movement, the MAGA people, the Make America Great people, I call them the MAGA people, George, okay, the MAGA people. When you take a look at the MAGA movement, okay, really what it is, and you see all of that, these people don't talk to pollsters. They don't want nothing to do with pollsters. They don't, I mean, no more than I would. I wouldn't talk to a pollster. If you came to me, I'd tell you where to go with the you know, go see Johnny over here. You know, I wouldn't tell you either, George. So, I mean, you know, is it a big surprise? I mean, is anybody, are these polls worth anything, I'm asking?
Well, obviously not. Because, as you say, people will either not speak to them or will lie to them.
Or lie to them.
Hillary was a damaged candidate, and they refused to believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they did believe it, they ignored it and hoped it would go away.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't go away. Hillary was the key to protecting the deep state. She lost her rigged election to Bernie Sanders, and she lost her election to Donald Trump. And everything collapsed around them, and they're still collapsing. And that's the damage they're trying to
see, that's it, George, right there. You just said the Holy Grail right there, brother. You just said it right there. The deep state and the fact that her election and that election into high office would have secured the deep state to go further on. But what happened is it changed the course of direction. It changed history. I mean, the Trump presidency, we are living in historical times, totally historical times. And you don't know this at the moment, but you will know this later on in life. And certainly the next generation will know it, that we are living in unbelievably historical moments of time. There's no doubt in my mind, like it or leave it, this is an important moment of history. Listen, panel, I want to talk to you too about the president's health. Did you see the reports come out? You know, the one thing about the media, and you know, as we transition from the polls to the health, and I want to talk about this porn star moment as well, but let me say this. You notice one thing about the media, my friends, they never talk about their own numbers. Their own numbers are worse than all of them. Of course, the media and Congress are at the bottom of the basement. They have a hard time competing with each other, Congress and the media. Who is the worst of the worst? Those are the awards, by the way, they really should be playing for here. But you never hear, you know, it amazes me that they never report on their own numbers, but they're quick to report on the president's numbers. which, by the way, are ranging, some reports have them anywhere from 39 to 49, depending on which polls, which day, and who's saying what. But I don't think anybody's, I don't think a lot of people are talking to these pollsters. I don't think they're accurate, and I think you need to tune them out. I pay no attention to polls whatsoever. I haven't, and I'm not going to tomorrow. So that's my recommendation, everybody. President's health. Doctor comes out. President's in excellent health, okay? Absolutely. Puts the whole thing out there, spends an hour being drilled by the media, back and forth, back and forth. Well, then, Ilana, the reports come out, and the New York Times says, this is their headline, Trump's physical revealed serious heart concerns, outside experts say. Okay, oh yeah. Washington Post says, is Trump as healthy as the doctor says? You know, these are the big, well, what's happening now? I've never seen a case where they were least, I mean, these people were so let down that he didn't have life-ending cancer, Ilana Friedman. They were so hoping that the president, that the doctor came out and said, well, he's got a life-ending disease, friends. So I've got really sad news, you know, wink, wink. You all got your Christmas wish. I mean, it's as bad as that, Ilana Friedman. I know I'm being a sarcastic, you know what. But I think you could almost say it's as bad as that.
It's actually, I think it's a lot worse. What they did, if you saw this press conference, I was fascinated and I watched the whole thing and it was just incredible that these so-called journalists were attacking the doctor who gave the report. And he was very, I thought he behaved very well under the circumstances.
Wow, you think?
But he reiterated over and over. Yeah, he was amazing because he was very dignified throughout.
Can you, Ilana, could you imagine me being the doctor and coming out? Could you imagine me, Ilana, with that role and sitting there for an hour? Oh, my golly. Wow.
No, I don't think so. I think you would have given as good as you got. But when Dr. Sanjay Gupta asked the question about heart disease.
Yeah.
That was hysterical. If it hadn't been so serious, it would have been very, very funny. Because it never came up. You know, it was just, he pulled it out of thin air and he made a point, and then the rest of the press just jumped on it. And so that was the New York Times. And the New York Times, of course, we used to say about them that all the news that fits, we print. But it isn't news anymore. They make it up as they go along.
What's he call them again, Ilana? The Phelan New York Times, is it? The Phelan New York Times? He's branded them as.
But they would fail because they are doing so much damage by publishing just false stories. It's not news anymore. Right. And so, I think this whole business about the president's health, the president is in excellent health. Right. I was astonished at some of those numbers. They're just extraordinary.
Well, he don't drink. He don't smoke. He doesn't do drugs. He doesn't drink. He doesn't smoke. I mean, all the man has is, I guess, sex with porn stars is all I understand. Yeah.
But I'll tell you something. He walks a lot. He plays golf sometimes.
They accuse him of being lazy. I know.
Yeah, but he walks. You know, if you live in the White House, you walk a lot.
Yeah, but you know what, Ilana? They say he shouldn't get a golf cart. Like he should walk from hole to hole. But I got to tell you, actually, haven't been on the golf course. And by the way, I'm not the greatest golfer. But when I have been on there, actually, when you get a cart, you actually walk more because you have to chase the cart. You have to walk to the cart back and forth. So you actually walk more when you get the cart than when you don't get the cart. You know that, Ilana?
By the way, when you get to be in your 70s, walking is a really good exercise.
Listen, before we expire here in our time here and we get on to our next segment here, I want to talk to you about these accusations. Dennis, talk to me on what you understand. And let me tell people, if you haven't heard this story, and there's not a lot out there about this story, but evidently, if it's all true, then Trump did engage, the accusations are that he engaged in an affair with a porn star. Her name is Stormy Daniels, early in his marriage to Melania Trump. Now, so people are saying, some people are saying, well, if he did, what does that say? Does it change anything? I mean, it's widely known in some of the reports I'm seeing here that, and Trump has acknowledged, by the way, that he cheated on his first wife, Ivana, with Marla Maples, who became his second wife. And the reference point here, President Bill Clinton wasn't removed from office for his marital infidelity, and God knows he had a few of those. So how relevant is this story or not, Dennis, and do you think it's true?
So what's coming out now is there's some sort of settlement that they have with this woman. back in the, during the campaign, the news media knew about this. There are innumerable stories at this point, but at the time, all the news bureaus thought the information was so flimsy they dropped the story. I mean, you know, there's a very interesting story by a report by Ken LaCourte, who was at Fox News at the time, and shelved this whole Stormy story.
And he got hell for it.
And he published a missive the other day, basically saying, "Look, I had nothing. I mean, you know, I'm a, we're legitimate news bureau."
Yeah, but you don't. If you work for the New York Times, you don't need anything, brother. It's okay. You can report that.
Well, no, but you know, the New York Times is basically. I just read about the president's health, and they're all over him because he's got a 143 cholesterol thing, which is like, you know, just get another 5 milligrams of Lipitor and you're good.
Right. George, what do you think about this report on the Stormy Daniels and the money paid? Do you think there's truth to it? Number one, do you think the money was paid, and do you think there is a smoking gun here?
Yes, maybe, so what?
You're far too practical, George McClellan.
I'm with you, George.
Yeah, I'm with George, too. Yeah, this is a so what.
Yeah. This is a so what, huh?
I mean, look, if Clinton was impeached, not because he had an affair with that young lady in the office, Oval Office, but because he lied.
Right.
That line, and I don't care, you know? To me, it's another Democratic assault or assault by the left establishment, the media establishment, to bring down Trump, which is their aim. Anything that they can throw against the wall that will stick to bring down this president, they will try. To me, it's a lie. I don't believe it at all.
All right. We'll leave it right there. Big, big thank you to our panel. George McClellan, always appreciate having him here. Dennis Santiago, Ilana Friedman, thank you all for just a great contribution. We just really appreciate you. And by the way, a lot of their write-ins and their opinions and stuff, you'll see on a regular basis right at America Out Loud. Just go to AmericaOutLoud.com. Some of the most fascinating information there that you'll find. It's very intriguing, very interesting, and it is a refreshing viewpoint than most of the garbage you'll find out there, friends. Listen, coming up next, well, I have a special guest coming on the show just ahead here. And in this next segment, I will give you, my fellow friends and Americans, my predictions on the future of our two-party system and why we are living in historical times. We'll do that right after this quick pause.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's americaoutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Well, as I promised you here, I would give you my predictions on the future of our two-party system here and why we are living in historical times. Welcome back here to Viewpoint this Sunday. Aver, as you know, is a political commentator. She's become a really unique radio personality. She's an excellent author who writes about the everyday men and women with a focus on patriotism. And Ava also, by the way, produces this show with Jim McKay. I want to give a shout out there as well, so you all know that. But all right, so let's get to some of our predictions here, Ava, and talk a little bit. We've just had a robust conversation with George, Ilana, and Dennis, and talking about the government shutdown and the memo as well, and what happens, and a myriad of other topics here. But in regards to this shutdown now, as far as, you know, we talk about the blame game and all of that, but the question is, the DACA isn't up till March, Ava. So, you know, here we are now at this point. Does this go on? I mean, it could. Do you think there's any chance? I mean, there's no chance we would be having a government shutdown till March, obviously. They got to pay the military. I mean, this is who's going to hurt is our soldiers and military folks. I mean, they're going to have to come to some resolution. But how that's going to happen when the Democrats are insisting on resolving DACA now?
Exactly. I think we have this a little bit backwards. I wish it was Congress that didn't get paid and the military did get paid. But I don't know if an executive order could be written for that specific purpose, but I would encourage President Trump to do that at this time. I don't know how long this will last. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling that the Democrats are already regretting it. Even the lamestream media mm-hmm. are reporting that this is a Democrat shutdown.
Right. Yeah, Schumer shutdown, they're calling it there now.
Yes.
But yeah, it looks like this was a bad move. I think they probably may be regretting it as well. Now, how do they get out from under? And the hole that they're dug already is the question. It sounds to me like the president is going to probably have to give them an olive branch or save face to them somewhere. I hope, you know, many people would say they hope he doesn't do that, Ava. But how else are they going to resolve this if that's the case? All right. If this continues on at this point, what is going to be the future of the Democratic Party? You know, to me, this is a very historical moment in time. And so when I talk about living in really in interesting times, but really historical times, that we're going to look back later on in life and the next generation is going to look back and know this was a momentous time in political history in this country. In many, many ways, I relate this very, very moment of time back to 1860. And I relate it back to throughout the 1850s. You see, in the 1850s, slavery was the big conversation in our country. And it was a real struggle within the political parties. At that point, one of the more prominent parties was the Whigs Party. Now, the Whig Party, that was before the Republican Party. And of course, 1860, Ava, is when Abraham Lincoln became our president and actually became the first president of the Republican Party. He was the very first president, in fact. But it was the end of the Whig Party, which of course, Abraham Lincoln was part of when he was part of the Illinois back in with the Illinois legislature and all. He was part of the Whig Party then, Ava. You know, he wasn't
right.
The Republican Party didn't exist. And so that's kind of where he was coming from. Now, I wonder today, is this a moment in time where the reinvention of a party, you know, it doesn't get lost on me that, you know, back through the Obama years, many were predicting the end of the Republican Party. Well, let's face it, Ava, the Republicans did not have their program together really well. They were you had the shift of the Tea Party movement. You had all these shifts within the Republican program, and they couldn't seem to agree on anything. They couldn't get their program together. Then along comes Trump. Okay, so there are two big questions I want to talk about and answer today here. One is, has the Republican Party become now the party of Trump? I mean, you see a lot of them leaving office and a lot of the swamp dwellers are now running pretty fast and hard. The Republican Party appears to be being reinvented as well in some regard.
Well,
I'm wondering at this point with the Democratic Party, is that essentially dead? And now does it become another party, whatever you're going to call it? Maybe you call it the Progressive Party. Maybe you call it something else. But it seems to me it's been hijacked from the people like Ellison, and you got Bernie Sanders, and you got Elizabeth Warren there, and you got all of these people that have gone pretty far to the left. Is it now the moment where that party needs a new name and a new direction?
Well, I think when the governor of New Jersey was just installed into office, he said he was in the Progressive Party. And so I see a lot of people on social media and on regular media, television, radio, and so forth.
Right.
Progressivism is really the thing. That's the word they use to describe their party. Mm-hmm. And people who study history would understand what progressivism is.
Right.
You know, you read Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, and you'll get a pretty good flavor of what's going on right now. Those 12 Rules for Radicals are actually being utilized by the Democratic Party right now. So I see this just as you just couched it. It's a huge shift, a huge difference in opinion. This is not JFK's Democrat Party.
No.
And that's gone away. And the interesting things that I'm watching, I see personally, I have people that are former Democrats following me on Twitter now. And I always welcome them with open arms because I think they need to, you know, come to a place where there's some reason and some, you know, real true debate going on.
So you're finding them looking for a home, a new home maybe, or something like that?
Yes. Yes. And I welcome all. I welcome, you know, libertarians, independents, you know, former Democrats, mm-hmm. people that are just looking for some reason, some sanity to this whole thing. I think the Democrat Party is moving very far to the left, and I think it will shrink as a result of that. You know, I don't see them bringing millennials into that because it's a depressing party. It's not a fun place to be. When you watch these marches and, you know, the anger and the vitriol and, you know, the hatred that's spewed out against, you know, President Trump for really no reason at all. And it's really sad to watch. And I think over time, that can really eat into your mental state. I mean, I don't think it's healthy.
It looks to me like the party is going to have some real explaining to do. And what I'm saying is, when you have such a major rift in there, something has to give. That's where the Republicans were back many years ago when Obama was in power, when the Tea Party was coming in. There was a rift. If you remember then, Ava, there was a lot of talk about the Republican Party becoming something else. Do you remember?
Oh, I joined the Tea Party at that time. Right. It was 2010. Yes,
there was a lot of talk about maybe even the Tea Party becoming the new Republican Party. I mean, this was a major conversation. It never happened, and the Republicans kept going on. But here we are today, and what I'm suggesting is this. If you look back at 1860 and you look back at in through the 50s when the Whig Party went away because of the point of slavery and the Republican Party, and Lincoln stood up and said, no, he's not going to stand for slavery. He wanted to abolish the slavery. And the Republican Party was formed. This is after Lincoln was a Whig. And the Whig Party went away, but was the reinvention of the party. In many cases, Trump refers to Lincoln a lot, Abraham Lincoln, and the way that he governed and the way he was a very unusual character, unpolitical, mm-hmm. not well-liked in a lot of circles, Ava. He was very hated, as the president goes, you know, very hated. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they took him out at the end of the day. They murdered him and took him out. And so I'm just wondering now at this moment of time, if this isn't a real comparison moment in history where the Democrats are in a they're in a big pickle here. Maybe are they the not so much the philosophical point of it, but are they the new Whig Party as far as going away now that they've put themselves in the corner and they're going to have to reinvent themselves in some regard? Could that happen?
Well, I think that's kind of the trifecta that's going down here. The government shutdown is one thing.
Right.
And then this FISA memo that will be released, I believe, very soon will be the second thing that they'll have to deal with. And then the third thing is the fact that, I mean, just so many people will be disenchanted when all of this information comes out. I mean, the last few remaining Democrats that have any sort of education or any sort of reasoning ability will look at this and say, you know, I don't want to be a part of this. And I think it will split the Democratic Party apart. That's what I think.
See, that's what I'm guessing. And so my that is my prediction as well now. So as I promised everybody that, you know, and this is what I think is going to happen now. I think we're at a moment of truth and something is going to have to give. And I we could have seen this over the last 10 years at any moment within the Republican Party status as they had that major split in there. And let me say this. The Republican Party, by no stretch, are innocent and they're having their own problems and they'll continue to have their problems as any party does. I don't come to you as a Republican today. I come to you as an American, and I come to you as a conservative American. And my desires for this nation and freedom for all and equal rights for all, that's where I come to you from. And so I speak from the heart when I say that. Listen, I've got a lot of great friends on the left and a lot of great friends on the right. I don't always enjoy the extremist viewpoints. They're not my viewpoint. I don't think the left or the right, I think they become very hazardous to our country. Ava, you know that about me. You talk to me all the time about that. You send me messages, say you're far more pragmatic than most of the lunatics on both sides of the aisle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you sent me a whole bunch of descriptives the other day that said these are all the adjectives that describe you. Of course, I can't share them on air here with you all because they get a little nasty. But in any event,
I think it's very important though to keep an open mind, even when you're listening to someone who's not in your party or not in your camp.
That's right.
It's always a learning experience. So I try to be open-minded myself.
Well, you've done that a lot. You've actually done that a lot. Since you've become really more in step with America Out Loud and become such a big part of our movement and things we're doing here, Ava, I've been so proud of your work. And you've become very open-minded. And I've seen I've seen the maturity of you as a really great political analyst and a commentator. I think you've done remarkable.
Thank you. That's very nice to say.
From the early days of where you started with our program, it really is. And we enjoy having you on, America Out Loud, as we do with everybody here. Again, there's a lot to this program, friends, that make it tick. And so My mission here is to deliver what I call is the out loud truth, not a far driven agenda of left or right, friends. But I do think it is an interesting moment in time, and I'll leave you with these thoughts here, that at this moment of time, if the DACA and the Dreamers are put in front of our military, if they're put in front of Americans and what have you, I understand they want what they want. But, you know, is this about buying votes? Is it about buying future elections? I don't know. You decide that. You answer that question for yourself, friends. But is that the real reason? Then why? What else? I would like an explanation from these leaders as to why you're doing that. We understand the point of the DACA and the Dreamers, and we can have that conversation. I haven't heard anybody, even some of the crazies on the right, some of them, you know, they're not suggesting we throw these people off the boat and, you know, drown them or send them. I mean, you don't hear a lot of that except the far extremist sites. People want to resolve these problems. They want to come together. But again, when you hold that ransom, how far have you gone then? That's really the question they're going to have to answer. And if that memo is what it is, I'm telling you now, we are in a moment of time that is going to, we're going to look back at this moment and see, this could very well be the end of the Democratic Party as we knew them. And not being a wise guy here, but in that, and also, let me say this, this could also be a real big opportunity and a real big future, because everything that happens that way becomes a new opportunity. So maybe there is a new opportunity to put a new party together. And maybe this is an opportunity to look at our politics in this country. So listen, as an optimist, I don't look at this as a, you know, bad guy, good guy, we lost, you won, we lost, whatever. That's not how I look at it. But maybe it is time to redefine the deck chairs here on the Titanic of America and see where we're at, friends. I'll leave that with you. Thought there. Think about all this as the circus continues on in Washington, D.C., and as the politician and the comedians and the circus stars up there continue on with their shenanigans. I can't make this stuff up, friends. All we do is continue to deliver the news to you, and we deliver what we call the out loud truth. Listen, we thank you for being part of this, and we invite you back to America Out Loud. Incredible writers back there, columnists, a lot going on in our radio show, America Out Loud Talk Radio, and thank you again for being part of this. Listen, Viewpoint this Sunday will always deliver an honest analysis and opinions on all sides of the political aisle. We don't discriminate against an opinion. The main thing is we are always in search of the out loud truth.